Hello, and welcome back to the Restore Planet podcast with me, your host, Jack Cole. So today I'm joined by Tim Epley, who's over in Minnesota, who's going to be talking with us about wildlife and biodiversity and things going on down in Madagascar. So first of all, Tim, welcome. Thank you so much for offering you some of your time today. And you start by telling us a little bit about your background and what it is that you do.
Yeah, thanks for having me. So I'm the Chief Conservation Officer for Wildlife Madagascar, which is a relatively new NGO that's working in Madagascar. So yeah, about myself, I have a PhD in animal ecology and conservation. And prior to that, I had a MSc in primate conservation. And I've just always been fascinated by animals and had this obsession with primates. And that road eventually led me to Madagascar, and I've been working there now for about 18 years. That just never seems to end, and so I love it. I spend about half my year there.
Lovely. So you start by telling us a little bit about what is it that makes Madagascar so great for biodiversity and wildlife, and what are some of its more iconic species, or perhaps ones that people might not know about?
Yeah, so Madagascar, it's really just an incredible place. It's been separated from the African and subcontinent Indian landmass for a very, very long time. And so that isolation allowed for just this fast evolution of a number of different unique species. And among them are our primates, are the lemurs, which only exist in Madagascar. So many people think of lemur, when they hear the word lemur, they think of a ring-tailed lemur because that's what they see in the zoo. But in fact, there's 112 different lemur taxa that are around, there's around 106 different lemur species. And so there's this incredible diversity across five different scientific families. And so it's really a unique place. So every forest that you go into in Madagascar is going to have a completely different lemur species assemblage. You're going to see new species in each forest that you go into. And on top of that, 98% of those 112 taxa are threatened with extinction. So they fall somewhere within the IUCN categories of critically endangered, or vulnerable. And so their situation is very dire. And so for us as a conservation NGO and for researchers, coming up with effective solutions for saving these species and making sure that they continue to exist is really important. Now, beyond lemurs, there's a whole other host of wildlife in Madagascar that are unique to the island. It just has this incredible high number of, or high level of endemism, where 90% of the plants that exist there only exist in Madagascar. Something like 99% of amphibians and reptiles, only the species that are there only exist there. They're endemic. I think the lowest species endemism that we have is birds, which may fall around 70%. But so you have this real high level of endemism, and when you compare that with other biodiversity hotspots. Are you familiar with what biodiversity hotspot is?
Please
No.
listen.
So these biodiversity hotspots that have this high level of endemism, but yet under extreme stress or extreme threat, when you compare that to the top five most biodiverse hotspots, Madagascar has three times more family endemism than all of the next ones in the list. And so it's just this extreme endemism that makes it so important. So it's been referred to in the past as the Galapagos of Africa, but it's really just it's its own thing, and it's so important to have all of this just in this tiny area, which is 2.5 times larger than England or than the UK. So for your listeners in the UK, it's just slightly larger, just a little bit over double, but yeah. All of that endemism packed in there. And so that's what makes it incredibly important.
And you mentioned the high level of endangerment and threats that particularly the lemurs are under, as well as other species. And what has brought that about over recent decades? And what are some of the more specific threats according to different species? How are different species experiencing these things in different
Yeah,
ways?
so Populate human population trends. I mean, this is the same case around the world. We have population booms that have been going on, and a lot of these local communities that are living in rural areas are dependent on forest resources, whether that's for building their own homes or clearing land for agriculture or for graze lands for their livestock. And this contributes to it. Madagascar is an island, and so there's limited amount of forest to begin with. And so as these communities continue to cut down forest or fragment the landscape, then unfortunately that habitat disappears. And so those animals, that wildlife that are dependent on those forests ultimately disappear. So humans in Madagascar, it's a relatively recent arrival. It's hotly debated. I'm not a paleontologist. I'm not an anthropologist. So I don't really know. But it seems to be somewhere within 14,000 to 2,500 years ago that humans first arrived in Madagascar. So somewhere within a pretty recent history. And since then, there have been a number of species that have gone extinct. So we've had something like 17 or 18 lemur species that were all larger than today's current extant species that exist there, have gone extinct. So some of them, like Megalodapus, would have been the size of a gorilla, somewhere between 300 and 350 kilos. And so these were, enormous lemurs that have since gone extinct. The elephant bird, which was the largest bird ever, much larger than an ostrich, that's since gone extinct as well within recent history. And so, the human population, as it continued to expand throughout the island and put those pressures on the natural resources, that's unfortunately, resulted in a lot of these species becoming threatened. And not just lemurs, but also birds and other small mammals. We have a small number of carnivores like the fusa, Fonsira, which are small Euplurid mongoose. They're also under threat because of the habitat degradation, but because of invasive species, feral species. So we have, dogs, feral dogs, feral cats, which are effective hunters. And so they're getting outcompeted as well. So, and then on top of that, there's climate change, which is just, again, another issue that's affecting everywhere in the world. With the position of Madagascar within the Southwest Indian Ocean, as those war ocean waters continue to heat up, cyclones seemingly are becoming a little bit more frequent and maybe a little bit stronger. And so that can have a huge effect as they rip through these habitats and create canopy gaps and throw off fruiting phenology trends in the forests. And so for lemurs that are dependent maybe on fruits or on nutritious foods that are provided by those trees, cyclones disrupting those patterns can have a real devastating effect.
Now, to bring this into your work and your organization, please tell us about how Wildlife Madagascar was started, when, and what it is that some of the work that you guys get up to day to day.
Yeah, so Wildlife Madagascar started probably about a few years ago. I joined early last year. So this is I'm relatively new to the organization as well. So we've kind of been building it at the same speed. So this was started by a woman, Deborah Erickson, who was a former marketing director for San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance. And funny enough, I had worked previously for 5 years with San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance, leading their Madagascar lemur conservation program. Now, we never crossed paths in San Diego, which was bizarre. And it wasn't until after my contract had ended that we got in touch, and I found out that she was starting this organization and moving to Madagascar with her family. And so we got to talking, and our vision was, perfectly aligned, and we had the same ideas. And so I joined, and we've been growing the organization since then. So right now, we are operating in three landscapes. So we're in Anzanahare Bay Sioux Special Reserve in the northeast. We're at a site called La Mananara, which is part of the Anjezoro Bay Ungavu protected area in the Central Highlands, just north of Antananarivo, which is the capital. And we're working in Namoruka National Park in the northwest of Madagascar. And in each of these three sites, we have a three-pronged approach to our conservation efforts. So the first prong is looking at conservation research and biodiversity protection, and where we're creating field stations, and we're focused on working with local communities at, training them up as research technicians and field guides, and monitoring the lemur populations, chameleon populations, birds, all of the fauna and flora that exist in these areas, and then organizing patrols. A lot of times these patrols are joint with the land manager and community liaisons and other gendarme people that are able to make arrests if there is a need for that, for illegal activities occurring within a protected area. So we have all these conservation initiatives under that scope. And then the second is our enhancing agriculture and sustainable development. So more specifically, we'll spend time in each of the communities within a peripheral zone of these landscapes, and finding out where their needs are, what's going on in their lives, what's the cash flow look like, what crops work for them, which ones fail, how often are they feeding, actually taking metrics on children to look at malnourishment. And so we've just established those sort of baselines for these areas, and we'll continue to monitor that in the into the future every year, so that we can adjust our community-based initiatives, whether it's helping out with alternative protein sources, bringing in other varietal crops that may be drought resistant or more resistant to high humidity, so that they can end up with a larger agricultural yield to sustain them. Other business opportunities, kind of entrepreneurship, training, and so a lot of different elements to that sustainable development side. And then the third is ecotourism. So, in order to protect these landscapes, in order to protect the wildlife, the fauna and flora that exist within these protected areas, we really need to make sure that the communities around them are thriving. If they're not thriving, then there's going to be that continued pressure on these natural resources and extracting, often illegally, these resources from the protected areas. And so we want to make sure that these communities are thriving. And so all of these, it's kind of a Venn diagram. They all interplay with one another. So making sure that the people have the food that they need and that's sustainable is really important. But in terms of ecotourism, if we can bring in money, and not backpacker level money, not small, occasional, we'll get like two or three backpackers or some tourists. That's not going to do anything to sustain these populations, these people. But bringing in high-end donors, high-end tourists that are going to pay top dollar to see these incredible animals, these incredible landscapes that only exist there, if they can pay those higher prices, then that money can really go towards all of these different efforts that we have in place. And so we can train up local po the locals for various positions within our ecotourism programs. And then all of that money will then be infused into those communities. And so currently, that's what we're doing in Namoruka. We haven't done this yet in our other sites, but this is the ultimate goal, is to get to this point where we have high-end tourism in all of our sites. Those tourists pay a conservation fee for every day that they're there, and those conservation fees then completely sustain our efforts when working with the communities and working in the protected areas. And so it ends up being a self-sustaining situation. So it's not dependent on grants and all of this other sort of stuff. And we can really make sure and monitor, make sure that those people's villages, those communities are thriving.
Fascinating. And so transitioning from the, as you said, the backpacker style model to more high-end ecotourism, what are some of the challenges of that, and how does that generally work? How do you build into that new form of ecotourism?
Yeah, so this is a whole new area to me. I'll
Right.
be honest.
Okay.
I was a dirt backpacker for a long time.
Me too.
And there's nothing wrong with it. I think that all of these places are going to continue to have that level of tourism available to them. I don't see a reason for shutting that out. I think that everybody should have access to these sites to see these beautiful areas and witness this incredible wildlife. But that the transition really is just in working with companies that are already at that level. So in Namoruka, we work with the Namoruka Singing Camp, which is a brand new eco lodge that just opened in August of this year. They previously had been operating the Mandjari, or they also operate the Mandjari River Camp in the southeast of Madagascar. Where they are situated in a spiny forest and they cater to, again, high-end tourists that fly in on charter flights. And so this company that operates both those sites, Madagascar Classic Collection, they are very familiar with the vendors and they already have the marketing in place. And so other than just building those facilities and training their staff or training the local staff on what exactly the needs are and how we cater to that. It's been a pretty seamless transition. They already had all of these things in place and were able to just kind of plug and play and just bring in the new tourists. And so for our collaboration with them, we are doing all of the monitoring and hoping to put in some fire breaks and create new trails and all of that around the national park. But one of the first things was really to work on habituating animals so that the guests that are arriving will have good photo opportunities and be able to enjoy the wildlife that's there, get that same experience you'd get in maybe a more visited national park. And so we spent a couple of months habituating Deccan's Shafak, which are critically endangered, Ulimar rufus, which are either endangered or vulnerable, and some of the other larger-bodied, more charismatic lemur species around there. And so that was a little bit of a struggle at first, but like habituation is with any animals, everything has been great since then. It's all falling into place really well.
You clearly outlined brilliant work you're doing with local communities and why that's so important to take that approach. And what are some of the challenges that you faced engaging with communities, trying to get them on board, showing to them that this really is an opportunity for them? How does that process work? How has it worked specifically in Madagascar?
Well, I will tell you, in Namoruka, it was not hard at all. Namoruka, this area, hadn't really seen any tourists. They hadn't had any interest in the area at all. So I believe the national park was receiving around 4 to 5 tourists per year. And so when the local communities, learned that, oh, there's going to be this eco lodge and there's going to be all these opportunities, they were all on board every morning. Hundreds of people would show up, wanting a job and finding out how they can help. And so that was really great. Now, in other areas where we've been working, like in Ansanahare Bay Sud, it's a little bit of a different story. The Sava region in northeast Madagascar is one of the top vanilla producers in the world. It's also a bit of a breadbasket for Madagascar. And so there's a heavy focus on agricultural production and output and being able to sell those goods to the rest of not just their region, but elsewhere within all of Madagascar. And so getting people to recognize the importance of conservation and conserving the forest nearby, which all of their agricultural fields are dependent on the water that is coming from the forest. Making those connections, those small connections, and getting and it's not that they already recognize that. They understand the importance of conserving the forest for water conservation and for a lot of things. But Sometimes there are families, there are households in certain areas that have less means, and they're in a situation where push comes to shove. It's easier to extract something illegally from the protected area, to make some money to be able to provide for their family than it is to maybe replant a field because a cyclone knocked it out. And so, in working with them, we're able to provide those opportunities where they can make some extra money, and they don't have to extract something. I've found that working with illegal poachers, working with people that are illegally logging, they're the ones that know the forest best. And if we can show them that their knowledge of the forest is really important to us, and that it has conservation value, and then they start to realize, oh, working for this organization long term is going to be far better for me than getting a short term payout because I mined some illegal amethyst or I cut down this tree for making a pirogue. It flips. They really go for it, and it makes a strong impression on them. So being able to show, that they that there's conservation value in their knowledge, and it goes a long ways.
Okay, so how do you feel things are trending in reality in terms of with, you've mentioned some statistics earlier about levels of threat a lot of these species are facing. So what is next 5, 10, 15 or so years, whatever you think is appropriate, what are the best and worst case scenarios, and what do you think the reality is on the ground at the moment?
Ooh, it's tough. I mean,
Of
it's
course.
honestly tough. Madagascar's population continues to grow. There's increased pressure on all these forests. There have been forests that I visited back in 2006, and when I've gone back within the last few years, we've seen, the boundary, the sign that was at the boundary saying, park, to stay out. The forest is now, a kilometer past that. So it's continued to be cut down. But at the same time, there are highlights. There are areas where I see where I've been in forests where they were previously tavi. They've been previously cut in areas, and we see a lot of natural succession. We see a lot of forest, regenerating. And I think that there's a lot of optimism around that. And I would say that over the last 20 years as well, there's more interest in conservation. There's more interest in reforestation and replanting areas of Madagascar, and they're starting to be more of a maybe a long-term vision for what Madagascar can be and what it should be. When we look back at the 70s and 60s, so I instantly think of Costa Rica, and I'm going to go back to, thinking about ecotourism. In the 60s and 70s, Costa Rica was pretty much decimated. It was agricultural fields, and it was just largely destroyed. And then the government made that decision, and ecotourism operators made that decision to really focus on conservation, protecting these lands, and creating this tourism industry. And now Costa Rica is pretty much the name is synonymous with conservation and ecotourism. And so they generate something like $2 billion in tourism money a year. There's no reason that Madagascar can't be that. All of the wildlife is, just endemic to that island. And so I think conservation efforts to reconnect these corridors between these larger fragments and everything in the country, I think eventually we'll get there. And I think that there's the interest in doing that. It's just, getting all of the stakeholders on board and making it known that, this is really going to be beneficial for the communities, for the government, for everyone in the long term. It takes some time. But it's working. It's starting to work. And I bring that up too, though, because the Costa Rica thing, and everyone goes to Africa and they lump Madagascar in with Africa. And in Africa, you can go to, dozen plus countries and see a lion and see an elephant and see a giraffe. You have all these different opportunities, but Madagascar, it's just there. You can only see lemurs there. You can only see leaf-tailed geckos and over 100 species of chameleon. They're all just there. It's all endemic, and you're not going to see it anywhere else. And so it's just really important to stress that with all the stakeholders and tourists, and try to drive those tourism members up. And those tourists coming in are going to help, are going to help at all levels, even backpackers. It's really important.
I think you've slightly alluded to my next question there a little bit, but what message would you like to share with our audience on why the biodiversity and species of Madagascar are so important and worth saying and worth saving, excuse me.
Yeah, I mean they're important because they're endemic, because you're only gonna find them in Madagascar. But at the same time, there's a number of species, especially for lemurs, that are critical for the plant life in Madagascar. So there's a number of trees, but other botanical species that require lemurs to ingest their seeds and then defecate them out, and that's how they're gonna germinate. And so if you take if lemurs end up getting hunted out, then there's going to be this cascade effect where those tree species are no longer going to be able to propagate, and those tree species are going to slowly die out, and you may end up with more invasives or feral or non-native species taking over some of these areas. And so yeah, it's critically important to safeguard all of these species, botanical and wildlife, at the same time. We can't just focus our efforts on only reforestation or only the wildlife, but we have to do both of it at the same time. And so, bringing in people, having tourists come and really recognize that the importance of these ecosystems and how everything is so interconnected is, I think, really important.
And finally, Tim, where can people find you to follow you and support your work?
Yeah, so you can follow us on, you can find us at wildlifemadagascar.org. You can also follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, maybe Instagram. I don't know. I'm not as
Social media.
involved with all that, but you can look up Wildlife Madagascar, and we try to publish, I think, or post maybe like 3 or 4 times a week about the work that we're doing in the communities, the work that we're doing in the forest, and just generally fun stuff as well. Maybe lemur of the week, or highlighting different species that you can see around Madagascar.